Well, I hope you can all hear me. I mean, if you can't hear me with the setup that Mr. Nicholas has got up and running, we're all in trouble. It's lovely to meet you. My name is James. I've come from Crickhowell, or South Powys. It's a long way away, and I'm very glad to be here. The last time I came to the church here, I was spending the night in what used to be the pastor's study through that door there. And the time before, I was sleeping on the floor. I honestly can't remember quite where I was sleeping. But I came up as a student, and so you were very kind to the girls. The girls who came up on the conference all went to stay with you in your homes, and they were treated like lords. Beautiful breakfast, probably a cooked breakfast. The boys slept on the floor. And it was fine the first night, you know, when you're trying to work out, can we sneak out to get a Chinese? And then when you realize you were prisoners, you just had to get on with it. And so by the second night, we came up on Friday, by Saturday night, we were bored to pieces. And I probably shouldn't tell you, but now that I'm not working or a student anymore, it doesn't really matter. We try to play rugby as best we can. That's what you do with 50 blokes here. We had to be careful we didn't break any windows, and we didn't, not on my watch. But what I did notice, the church were very good. Because you have a good crowd come in on a Sunday morning, you didn't want it stinking in the way that only 50 teenage boys can do. So the deacons were done by 8 o'clock in the morning, opening all the windows, trying to get a bit of breeze. So thank you for your welcome tonight. I'm very grateful. It's nice to be back. Thank you, too, for whoever has been in the kitchen. Haven't they done a good job? So, yeah, a round of applause for the kitchen team. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I'm glad to be here. It's a fun gig, but I'm looking at you and you're looking at me thinking, will you get off? Because we're waiting for the pudding. I appreciate that. But I've been given 15 minutes and I'll try not to take all of that. I want you to think of days that have changed the world. I've been asking people today, what days do you think have changed the world? And I don't know what you would say. The ones I've spoken to in South Powys and in, well, it's not the capital, it's Llandrindod. I don't know what Newtown comes up. I mean, isn't that where all the best people live in Llandrindod? I'm saying the wrong thing now, aren't I? The people have been telling me things like, what's changed the world? Lockdown. And there's a sense to which it has changed things, isn't it? Our life today is very different than it was 4 years ago. Somebody said, days that change the world. Somebody said 9/11. And that happened about 20 years ago. About 20 years ago. So let me ask some of you. I want two of you who have a bus pass. And I want two of you under 25. What days do you think have changed the world? Okay. Somebody with a bus pass ticket over there. Anyone, shout out a day that has changed the world. Don't be shy. Yes, lady in the back, green, got a scarf coming down and a green headband. Yeah, it's you. Can you think of a day that's changed the world? Yeah, that's what other people said. The war. Somebody on the second table. You're almost the end of 25. What day has changed the world?
The day iPhones came out.
Yeah, some of us remember things, that, life before telephones. Yeah. Yeah, okay. One of each. There isn't an older person over here. Sir?
Adam and Eve.
Well, yeah, that was... everything was going to change then, wasn't it? Whatever happened. Yes. Now I'm half deaf, so I can't hear. What's it? Friday. Hey, happy day, school's out, only for 2 weeks. Good, okay. Other people might have said something like, the eagle has landed. The day that somebody stepped on the moon. Though I'd say historically, I mean, that was a big day. That was in 1969. If people are thinking just lockdown, I'm thinking, come on, the world's been around quite a while. What other things might have changed the world? Revolution. People get excited by revolutions, civil wars and the like. This is what was said in France back in 1789 when the Bastille fell. When the last king is hanged with the bowels of the last priest, then the human race can hope for happiness. They wanted to get rid of the priests, they wanted to get rid of the king, and then life would be happy. Undoubtedly, lockdown significant. Let me see if you can think of this one. This was quite a while ago now, this was. This is back in 1661. We're talking history, proper history now. A poor son of an illiterate Lincolnshire farmer. He went to college in Cambridge. And he made his money, he paid for his fees by being a servant. That's how poor he was. And being quite a good student, when he graduated 4 years later, he had to go home for 2 years. That was the first lockdown. It was called the plague. So he had to get out of Cambridge because of the plague. And then Sir Isaac Newton became the first man knighted as a scientist. And the suggestion is that this one really is one of the big authors of science. His discoveries about gravity, look, I'll hold this, and then I will better not do that. His discoveries about gravity and movement changed the world. So somebody might say, well, the day that he went to Cambridge, he matriculated, that's a big day. Modern science was born. Last one. War. You see, if you want to really think history, you've got to think past the last 25 years. The Battle of Salamis. I don't know if you've ever studied history. Here's your 30 seconds on that one there. The Persians were the rulers. They had all the power. And they had a huge army and a huge navy. And they had 1,000 galleys. They had more ships than sheep in Newtown. It was huge like that. They were in charge, and the Greeks, I'm married to a half-Greek, so I can say it, sneaky so-and-sos, they were really clever. So what they did, a guy called Themistocles, and you've got to be pretty sharp, you've got to be top of your class to be Themistocles, because I mean, how on earth do you write your name down on any exam paper? He sends the king, Xerxes, a message. He says, I might come over to your side. Why don't you bring all the ships over to Salamis? And the king thought, well, fair enough, I'll do that. And he brought over his 1,000 ships, but of course the Greeks were sneaky. And they had 300 ships, and they basically rammed them. They just rammed them the way that some people drive their cars. They just crashed into the ships. And before you know it, hundreds of Persian ships were down. The Greeks lost 40. The Persians were sent packing, and in a year, they won the war. Now, if you know any Greek who says things like, well, all of history, all of science, all of medicine, all of language, all begins with the Greeks, none of that would have happened if it wasn't for Themistocles, who took on the Persians. So history changes, sometimes on big events, and sometimes on little COVID cells. There are days that change the world. And what I want to talk about tonight is another day that changed the world. It's Easter. We've got a lovely meal. We've said thank you. Something happened at Easter that changed the world. And I'd be willing to say that the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ was something that changed the world. What happened then had consequences. And so this is what I want to say in about 8 or 9 minutes. The reason I think that the death and resurrection of Jesus changed the world is because of, one, who's at the center of it, who's involved, who's getting involved in the business. Two, that this achieved something big for many people. And three, because it is relevant for everybody. And, you know, it is relevant for you. Even if your eyes are going and thinking, hurry up, hurry up, this is something relevant for you. Here, here's the first one. The story about Jesus is about no ordinary person. Jesus is someone who was betrayed by a friend. He was pronounced innocent by someone like Pontius Pilate and Herod. Even those guys said, there's nothing wrong with him. He hasn't done anything wrong. But the religious leaders wanted to put Jesus away. And so they had an illegal kangaroo court, if you're too young to know what that is. Just they rigged it so he would go down. And that's what they did. They incented a mob to shout, crucify him. Pilate, who was in charge, crumbled with peer pressure and just said, okay, fair enough, I'll run with whatever. And so Jesus, who's at the heart of this story, has to carry to his death a crossbeam, a big piece of wood, draped across his nape, the nape of his neck, like you see somebody carrying a sack. And that's what he had to do. He had to carry the crossbeam to his execution. Simon, well, he gets dragged in. He has to carry it. Why? You wouldn't find a Roman soldier touching it. They wouldn't help. Aside from being about to kill you, there's no way they would touch a cross. It was shameful. But Jesus carries on his back his crossbeam. And it was the crucifixion was a form of execution that was just really the worst. It was kept for the worst people. They would sometimes be experimenting how to be more sadistic and how to kill someone in a better way. Either way, without wanting to spoil your food, someone is attached to ropes and nails in public. Sometimes we always imagine it really high. Sometimes it would be at eye level, so you could see and look at them. When they crucified a woman, and they did that from time to time, they at least turned her around because nobody would want to see a woman. So they would nail her face to the wood. It was a cruel, horrible, terrible thing to do. And then many people, well, some people would be buried after they died, but others would just be left up there for the birds, and what the birds dropped while the dogs chewed. I'm moving away from the physical now, right? There's no more of that. But I'm moving away because there were people who watched, people who watched them. You'll see, and you can all take a copy of this afterwards, a copy of Luke. I've got this one, there's a pink one and a white one. They're on the tables, you're all encouraged to take it. As we look and see in Luke 23, there are people watching. They're just observing. And there are others who are sneering. They're mocking. They're having a laugh. They're seeing someone dying, and it's funny. That's how they are. And this word sneering, it's like when somebody turns their nose up at you. You know, you talk about people like that. That's what they did. They said, you reckon you saved other people. What are you doing for me? Okay, that was the first thing, wasn't it? This is significant because of who's at the middle of it, and it's Jesus, and you can read more about that here. Secondly, because of what he achieves. Jesus does something on the cross that dramatically changes people's lives forever. COVID has changed ours, and it's gone around the world, most of it. And it's had a terrible impact. But whether in 150 or 500 years we'll be talking about it, I don't know. They may still be talking about the plague that Isaac Newton had. I don't know if they'll be speaking about COVID because other things come along. In Jesus' day, he does something that changes life for so many. It was no ordinary crucifixion. People saw crucifixions all the time. It was quite ordinary. It was no surprise. Only for the worst people. Not for everybody, but just the worst. And that's what they did. And if you read Luke 23, you can find it on about page 60 in the book. It records his death. The Romans knew how to kill people. And they knew how to kill Jesus. Afterwards, when they said, he died a bit quick, they spoke to the centurion. And he said, no, I done it. He did. And that was good enough. Because the Romans were a killing machine. If they'd let someone half dead come off, they would be killed. The Romans knew how to kill people. And then there's an unusual darkness across the land when the sun is meant to be at the top. Some supernatural turning off of the sun. What's that about? We're also told across town, there's a curtain that's torn. Now, I'm glad to see you haven't got any big curtains here. But imagine if they did have a big curtain that ran all the way along here. And maybe they open it on Sunday so you can see what goes on. But then they shut it. And if, like me, you'd be thinking, well, what's going on behind there? Why can't I see what's going on there? What's so special about back there? And the Jews, they knew in their worship that God was perfect and holy, and you couldn't just wander in and have a chat. He was holy. And the curtain was there as a no-entry sign. A no-entry sign. That's what my friend did. Stefan, your brother-in-law, somebody's brother-in-law. Stefan, when he took us out when we were staff workers, when we were here, sorry, please give me an extra minute. When we were all here, I wasn't a student anymore, I was a staff worker. I was allowed to be in charge. And so I said, oh, come on, boys. Most of them are sleeping now. Let's go have a Chinese. So somebody's brother-in-law, wherever you are now, he said, oh, I'll drive the car. And Stefan drove the car into Newton. Oh, I've been here before, I know the Chinese is. Except the thing is, he drove down a one-way street. And here, you can't go the wrong way down. But Stefan did, but it was late at night, and who cares? You know, we hear about, we're in Newton, we just visitors. And it was fine until we got to the car the other side that was blocking the road. And he was a policeman. And he thought, you can't come down here. So at the same time, actually it's right in the middle of the verse. It's telling us about Jesus dying. And then right in the middle of telling us that Jesus died, it tells us that across town this curtain is torn. God is up to something. Anyway, we're going on with the story. Jesus, with a loud voice, cries. He said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. It's a cry of faith. He trusts God will deliver him. And so he dies. And Jesus' death was a little bit like, well, not yours, but when you die and I die, our hearts will stop beating and a doctor will come along and say, yeah, they're gone. Now, Jesus' death was like that. It was a real death. He really died. They put him in a grave and 3 days later he was alive. But he was dead and they knew he was dead. I told you, they know to kill people. But Jesus' death is different. Jesus' death achieved something big, and I can tell you more about this over coffee. But Jesus' death is something that stops. Jesus' death makes it possible for men and women and boys and girls to come to God. The curtain that said, you can't come to God, had been torn down. And what Jesus does on the cross, when Jesus dies to forgive sins, what Jesus does changes things for so many people. And that's because men and women and boys and girls, for the last 2,000 years, have been following Jesus. There's about a billion or so now. That's quite a few. That's more than in Powys, even. That's even more than the sheep we've got in Powys. And I'm not laughing at you, because I live in Powys too. There are more people across the world following the Christian faith because of Jesus. Here's the very last point, and I have to say this quickly. Now, you might be thinking, what's that going to do with me? I'm not interested in history. I don't know about Jesus. And whatever happens, and, you know, he died, it's nothing to do with me. Let me tell you. It does have everything to do with you. Do you remember how I said there were different people looking on? There were some respectable people maybe just coming to watch just to see what happens. Are his eyes going to fall out? You know, is something bad going to happen? People just come and watch. Some people were laughing and sneering at him. And some people were sad. The Bible tells us that all of us are involved in the story. Now, I know we weren't there 2,000 years ago, but all of us have an approach to Jesus, and all of us are responding somehow to him. We might be respectable and come to chapel, and we think it's okay, because we're a nice sort of person. We're probably going to get a mention in the newspaper at some stage. Probably they'll put our picture there. Maybe we'll have an MBE. Be nice. Well, there were people like that who watched Jesus dying. Then there were people who wanted to see him dead. And I'm not suggesting any of us think like that. But some people were really antagonistic and not happy with Jesus. I wonder which one, or what sort of person do you think you might be? Some people laughed and said, "Why don't you come down and then we'll think you're great. Do a miracle. Just come down from the cross. I know you're sort of tied up there. Come down and then we'll be really impressed with you." But Jesus isn't just a dancing monkey. Jesus isn't going to just come down to do a little trick for people, because Jesus' work depended on him staying there. And so he had to stay there. "Won't you save yourself and come down?" they cried. But Jesus needed to stay there. And he stayed there so that you and I can be made right. Last person in the story. Jesus' response to one of the guys at his side. One person said, "Jesus, I'm not impressed. You should come down, and why don't you save me?" The other guy said, "You know, I deserve to be here. He doesn't deserve to be here, but I do." And Jesus' response to him was, "Today you will be with me in paradise." That person there hoped for help, cried out to Jesus, "Jesus, if you were the powerful one, well, I want to be with you." And Jesus said, "Today you will be with me."